You haven't heard about the McCrispy yet? Well then, you probably haven't heard the sweet silence after the first crispy bite either. Go try it for yourself to hear the best not sound you've ever heard.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
2020 has been the year of things happening that are completely out of your control. There's one thing you can control, and that's shaving. Our sponsors are Manscaped, are here to remind you to do so. Manscaped is here to provide you with the best tools for your grooming experience. Chaz, have you had any funny manscaping experiences?
Okay, so here you go, Derek Riley. I used to only ever say, shave your face, right? Don't shave anything but your face, because it is totally brilliant to shave your face before you razor shave with Manscaped. But I've realized women don't like chest hair either. And so I've gone south. I have gone to the chest, and it's totally easy. And I mean, do you shave your chest?
I think men who shave the chest are half men, Chaz.
I don't shave all of it. I just shave the top part that comes up to my neck. So it's like an extension of my face down, right? I leave the chest, I suppose. I misspoke. But I shave the top third, the neck portion of my chest.
That's ghastly. Yeah, you get that thing where you get that little regrowth, and you see the regrowth on men, and you go, God, you actually shave the hair on your chest and your neck. I mean, neck.
I ain't going razor down there. So I'm just cutting the weird fluff that grows up over my V-neck. That's it.
Oh, yes, fair enough. But you could probably just trim that with scissors. It's probably a more effective experience.
Are you kidding me? The Manscaped tool makes it like I don't even have to think about it. I just do it in seconds, and I'm gold.
Well, in fact, listeners to the show will get 20% off and free shipping with the code DIRTYWATER. At manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com. And you use the code DIRTYWATER. Please use DIRTYWATER, because this whole thing will be pointless unless you use DIRTYWATER. So if you're going to do it, use DIRTYWATER, please. It's time to grab 2020 by the horns and shave. Take your grooming game to the next level.
The wait is finally over. Football is back. You might not be at the game this year, but you can still be in on the action of Bet Online. Chaz, have you been betting?
I haven't been betting yet, but that's only because it's so frustrating to bet here, where I am so happy for easy online betting, because I've always got an instinct that's always wrong.
What would you be laying your money on?
Oh, right now, I'd go hard on Joe Biden, to be honest. Do they bet politics or no?
I don't know. I think so, yeah. You can bet Biden. I think he's probably a 1.5-to-1 semi-favorite.
I mean, I guess I wouldn't bet him, but
I'd bet on Joe Biden fucking dying in the Oval Office.
Trump feels to me like he's cooked. This is not going to be a good ad, talking about how Trump is cooked.
But how good is Kamala Harris? She's beautiful.
I mean, except now she's offline. She's been derailed by the COVID.
An assistant got COVID, huh?
Yeah, but they're really taking her offline purposefully to show how much more responsible they are.
How much she cares.
Yep.
And how much better she looks in Timberland boots than Melania Trump, huh?
I mean, my goodness.
Okay, so from game spreads and totals to team player and coaching props, BetOnline gives you more options to wager than any place online. And there is always the online casino as well. It never closes. You can just spend all your money, lose everything you got, lose your wife's money, lose everyone's money. Okay, so head to betonline.ag to get today. AG, I guess, is Antigua. Isn't that amazing?
Sweet. That's where I want to be betting.
I'm not sure. I want to go to Antigua. So head to BetOnline Antigua today. betonline.ag today and take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. Again, that's betonline.ag for Antigua and sign up today. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts.
I'm Derek Riley. I'm with Charlie Smith and welcome to Dirty Water, where conversation smells like hair chemicals and old macaroni and cheese. Today's guest has been a rapper, like Cypress Hill and Helium, said one critic, is a television actor, Hawaii Five-O, and has appeared on cinema screens in Varsity Blues, Ocean's 11, 12, and maybe 13. He has surfed and skated since he was a little boy, and he's a black belt in the not-so-gentle art of jiu-jitsu. His daddy is one of the greatest actors of all time, a man who reached the apex of the game in the film Rollerball, which showed the sickness and insanity of contact sports and their allure. Our guest profoundly believes surfing exists as a meritocracy, and will debate, for years if necessary, the importance of hierarchy in the lineup. Introducing Mr. Scott Kahn.
I fell in love with Scott Kahn because of his role in Hawaii Five-0.
Yeah, if that's true, we got trouble. Wait, are you going to really say how we fell in love or no?
No, go for it.
I don't really know. I don't know who sent me. Someone sent me your book before we met, right?
Yeah. I think it was my old agent.
Yeah, sent me his book, and then I read it. And this all sounds like a bunch of crazy coincidences, but were you coming to Hawaii coincidentally at the same time that I got the book?
Yeah, I was over there just, I can't even remember what for. I think I was, yeah, something. It's never a hard reason to go to Hawaii.
Yeah, Derek, this isn't an interesting story. I apologize. I got the book and I read it right away. And then by the time he came over there, we sat down and he said, I kind of want to think about maybe making this thing into a TV show or a movie or whatever it was. He's like, but don't say anything yet to anybody. I was like, I won't say anything to anybody. And then coincidentally, at the same time, I put my foot in my mouth and said something bad about Hawaii. And then I had to like go drive up to the North Shore to have a meeting with Uncle Eddie because he was, everybody was pissed at me because I said something wrong. And somehow I ended up fucking opening my mouth about Chaz's book. And I had to call Chaz and be like, remember how I said I wouldn't say anything? Well, I said something to probably the person I wasn't supposed to say something to. So and I think instead of hating me, he appreciated my honesty. And that's how we became friends pretty much, right?
Totally. What did you say that angered Eddie, Scott?
I was on a talk show and I just, we were like busting balls on this talk show and I didn't say anything bad about Eddie. I just kind of, I said that the food wasn't good in Hawaii and that I was kind of losing my mind. I needed to get out, I'm like a city kid, but it was just stupid. We were just fucking around and, in Hawaii, one person hears it and then next thing you know, the whole island and, everybody was mad.
He posted about our food, bro.
Yeah. Yeah.
What did he say, bro?
But I mean, in my defense, I really didn't say anything that horrible. I just, but it was a good lesson for me,
That was early days in Hawaii Five-0, wasn't it? I mean, that was like year three or something.
Yeah, yeah. I got to experience like both sides of being a tourist in Hawaii. Like at first, I was so embraced and all I had heard, I'd never been to Hawaii. And all I had heard about is that it's impossible to get waves and you're going to, people are going to, give you static and treat you, you're going to just struggle to have a good time. And it was the opposite. Like I was so welcomed. Everybody was like, stoked that I could actually surf. So that I was like getting waves at good spots and everybody was looking out for me. And then that thing happened. And then like for the next 3 years, it was like the polar opposite, So anyway. Learned my lesson.
So how did you get the command from that you had to go see Eddie? How did the news arrive?
I was friend. I've always been friendly with Kala, and he was my boy. And when this shit came about, like people were, they were really pissed. And I called Kala, and I was like, "Yo, man, I didn't mean to, badmouth anybody." He's like, "Well, just come up and we'll talk to Eddie." I was like, "Okay." And, Eddie didn't like call for me or anything, but Kala was like, come on, we'll just talk to Eddie. And Eddie was cool about it. He didn't really care. He just, but yeah. So Maybe I'm making it more dramatic than it actually was. Maybe Eddie didn't even know what was going on. He was, you know.
But it was awesome. I mean, Eddie called me soon after. I was like, well, because I hadn't told Eddie yet I was writing a book. And so then I got the call from Eddie right after I was in Aspen. And what is fucking book? Who's writing a fucking book?
I basically fucked everything up. I fucked everything up. You know?
It was totally perfect. And then I got to do, Scott, I just had to read, I think I told you, I had to read Welcome to Paradise just a few weeks ago. It had never been an audiobook. And so I got to do Eddie Rothman the entire time. So I'm going to see how Eddie likes my version of him. Oh, you fucking guy.
Yeah.
You fucking guy.
But yeah, no, I genuinely, again, I didn't mean anything by it, and I'm not continuing to apologize 8 years later. But you know, but Hawaii like was very, they were like Hawaii in general was very good to me, and I meant no harm, and it got taken the wrong way. But I did regret it immediately, and I was like, oh fuck, man! Like everybody's being so cool to me, and then I like go like this, you know?
Kind of do you ever worry? Okay, real quick, we'll get into your history soon, but before, as I was finishing writing Welcome to Paradise. At the Gucci store there, the worker told me that money that's made in Hawaii always has to return to Hawaii. The fact that you made a shit ton of money in Hawaii, do you ever worry that you're going to end the rest of Hawaii? That Hawaii is going to call you back and you will die in Honolulu?
No, I'm not concerned about that. I know. Simple answer, no.
Okay, getting in real quick. We have Scott Kahn on today. Scott Kahn is a legendary actor.
Legendary.
Are you kidding? My personal favorite Scott Kahn role is, which I've shared, is the Mormon twin in Ocean's 11, 12, and 13, I think, right?
The Mormon twins in 13? Yeah, all of them.
Yeah, love the Mormon twins.
So legendary, you couldn't remember if I was in the last one.
Well, the last one was, let's be honest, sort of the forgettable one of
the Godfather 3. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Which I heard that Francis Coppola just recut, by the way.
Godfather 3?
Yeah.
Godfather 3 was so bad.
But he recut. I think there's a new cut of it that's supposed to be not as bad.
When did which Godfather did your father die in? Godfather 2?
No, 1.
He died in 1?
Yeah.
What? Sonny.
Yeah.
Wait, no. Your dad wasn't Sonny. Yeah, he was Sonny.
Yeah, he was. You're a fucking mess, dude.
This is the way I do podcasts. I day drink and then I Zoom.
That's good. I can't believe this whole thing started with me telling that story that I haven't told in 8 years that I thought I'd never have to tell ever again. And by choice, I brought it up. I'm still...
Eddie's just a... All of the North Shore people have turned into lovable teddy bears. There's no more scary on the North Shore. Right?
They're always very good to me, man. Even when I said the food wasn't good.
The great thing is that this is going to get back to Hawaii. They go, hey, he's talking shit about Hawaii
again.
I'm
like trying my best to have that not be what happens. Please don't. Let's not twist that.
You just have to mention the word Hawaii and you'll be holed up before the Russell Court.
So, no. Real quick, Scott Kahn, of course, legendary actor, son of a legendary actor, but got his start, I just read today, being a roadie for Cypress Hill.
Yeah.
You were like a straight, full-on roadie, like huffing, I guess not huffing anything, but...
We were huffing plenty.
Like carrying speakers and whatnot?
No. We actually had I don't know if you know who The Alchemist is. You know The Alchemist?
Yeah.
He actually just got nominated for a Grammy for Album of the Year. He was him and I had a group back then, and we were signed to the guys from Cypress Hill brought us on tour with them. So it was our second tour. We had a group together, me and The Alchemist.
Oh. That's awesome. So did you have like music aspirations the whole time or?
I had just aspirations of not having to go to school, you know, so like anything to not go to school.
And so really. Then when did you start? Was your first film Varsity Blues?
No, it was this movie called A Boy Called Hate. I was actually on that tour. I was 17 years old, and it was the end of the tour, and we did a show at Santa Monica Civic Center, and there was this director who came and saw the show and got in touch with my cousin, who happened to be a manager, and said, hey, will he come and audition for this movie? And I did it, and I ended up getting this movie, and that kind of like changed my whole creative life. You know, I stopped, gave up music, and went right into like, you know, movies and stuff.
When, and were you, did you grow up surfing? I mean, were you surfing this whole time, or did you discover surfing later in life?
No, I was surfing since I was a kid.
And so we'll get into some other great roles, but the Hawaii Five-0, when that came up, how, I mean, were you hyped? Like, okay, I get to go to Hawaii and surf and do this thing.
Yeah. I mean, that was the thing, you know. I mean, at first I had never really done a network TV show before, so I didn't really know what it was going to be like. So in my head, I thought it was, you know, I'll go to Hawaii for 2 weeks, you know, act, surf, hang out. You know, there's like a big jujitsu culture in Hawaii too. So I was stoked about, you know, going for that. I didn't realize that I was going to be there nonstop. And I think, you know, like the people that sort of presented it to me painted this picture of it being a little different than it ended up being as far as the workload and what I was going to end up doing. But yeah, initially it's a dream job, you know.
But stinking on the back end too, though, 10 years, I mean, syndication, whole nine, right? Like, I mean, yeah. Isn't that like a rare thing that happens? Like actually getting a syndicated TV show.
Yeah, I mean, syndication isn't what it used to be. So people think now if you're in a show that's syndicated, you're good. Exactly. For life. That's not true at all anymore. There really is no more real syndication because of streaming and because of the new deals that AFTRA and the Screen Actors Guild made with the producers and stuff. So it's not what it used to be, but it's still a score. I mean, if you told me, you know, 20 years ago that somebody was going to hire me for 10 years, I would have said that'll never happen. So, you know, it was definitely a huge rad thing to be a part of, but the syndication thing is kind of irrelevant.
Were you there like full-ish time for those 10 years, or were you?
No, the first 3 years I was, and then I sort of lost my shit and was like, I need to not be here all the time. You know, pretty much been a city kid my whole life. So that kind of living I like for 2 weeks, 3 weeks. But after that, I start to go nuts and, you know, I get like island fever pretty quickly. So after the third year, I renegotiated so that I could be home 2 weeks of the month and in Hawaii for 2 weeks of the month. So the last 8 years of the show, I was back and forth a ton. But the first 3 years, I was pretty much there straight.
When it came to the wrap, did you feel like I'm going to miss this place? I mean, do you feel like Hawaii has seeped into you in a?
For sure. For sure. I definitely miss Hawaii. What do you got, Derek? What's going on over there? What do you got going on?
I got a zit on the side of my face. Can you just feel it? You know, you just feel a zit just coming up.
I can't stop messing with it. Yeah.
And get that nasty thing. Get that nasty thing. It's on the screen. Yeah.
So what was I saying? What were we talking about?
Why? Hawaii in your heart.
What?
Oh yeah.
Go ahead. No, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding, Eddie.
No, I didn't even hear it.
I love it, Eddie. I love the joy.
Yeah, man, I do miss it. You know, I didn't think I would, but like I do miss it a lot. I mean, I don't mean to sound goofy, but there is something super special about that place. You know,
it's weird.
Where did you live in?
What's that?
Chaz, you want to ask?
Go.
Okay, I was going to ask, where did you live in Hawaii, Scott?
In town by Diamond Head.
Oh, lovely. Yeah. The biggest sprawling estate with green grass and
stuff. No, I didn't have that, but a cool little spot.
Were you in the same spot that I visited the whole time?
The whole time I was in that neighborhood. I rented the house where you visited. I was there the year before. I was at the house below that house. And then a friend of mine, he owned like two houses on that same street. And I rented a house from him up the block from where we were for like 5 years.
It really was. Derek Riley is an architectural I don't know, I don't want to call him a snob, but has taste and would have loved that neighborhood. Have you been up there, Derek?
I love it there.
Yeah.
What's the name of the famous Hawaiian architect, Osipov, Vladimir Osipov?
My buddy Alex on the show with me, he bought an Osipov house.
Oh, no way.
He's got a sick, he's an Australian dude too.
Oh, shit.
He has an insane Osipov. Like a
right, whereabouts?
Like two blocks away from me. Like, I won't give you his address, but it's very close.
Yeah, just comes Alex. I'm Australian, like you, my friend.
It's you know where Suicides is and Tongs and rice bowls. Like it's right above there.
Isn't wow, what does it cost to buy an Osipov house?
I don't know. I didn't lend him any money, and I'm pretty sure it's not cheap.
You know, Osipov houses kicking around, wouldn't you? In your portfolio?
Me?
Yeah.
Not yet.
hey Scott, I know you like to fight, and I like to do jiu-jitsu, and I've been trying to get Chaz to get into to Dewey, and you probably didn't get a chance to watch it, but I sent you a video. You watched
it? I didn't know I couldn't tell if that was Chaz. And then I did see it. What should we say?
So Chaz's advice, like, I would have said, you know, just arm drag, get in, little gable grip, and then just pull him down, get him on the ground.
So you train?
Only recently. I've been watching my son do it for 10 years.
Oh, right.
And I remember 20 years ago when Dewey first came to Maroubra, and I went down and photographed it for the magazine I was working on, saying, what the fuck are these guys doing? And now they're all, they're MMA fighters, Richie Vass. I don't know if you know Richie Vass, but they're MMA fighters and they're black belts and shit. And I've only been going 5 months. I love it. It's so addictive.
Yeah, it's really good. First of all, I couldn't. I there was that music that was playing over it. So, what were you doing when you were touching his face? What was happening?
His just beard looked so soft that I just wanted to give it a stroke.
Yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
He was really mad at me. He had called the cops on me earlier, actually, for jumping across a coffee table at a podcast and shoving him. And then he tried to press charges on me. And so then he felt bad about that, I think. So came over at a surf trade show and was getting aggressive. And I just petted his beard and then he socked me.
Yeah. I mean, it's a tough one. I mean, his punch, it seemed like he hit you with the inside. It didn't look like that guy threw a ton of punches in his life.
No, he got me with like his, I think, wrist in my ear.
Yeah. It was like a slap with his fist or something. Yeah. It was very strange. So, I would just say maintain the distance next time, you know, and if you're going to be that close, you want to wrap him up so that he can't hit. Otherwise, you want some distance. You know what I mean?
Do you go straight in with a punch? I mean, do you like to stand and punch it out, or do you prefer to get on the ground?
Well, the idea of jiu-jitsu is you want to control the distance. You either want to be so close in it, like you want to be holding on so that the punches, you can't get socked in the mouth the way that you did, or you want to have distance and be away from, you either want to close the distance or keep away. You get what I'm saying?
I mean, I hear you now.
You were just right in the middle. I mean, face touching, and then, thank God he didn't really know how to throw a punch, or he could have knocked you out, you know?
I think I'm unknockoutable is the thing. I think that's one of my secret tricks.
It's possible, yeah. And then even like the hand fighting, I didn't love the hand fighting. I would have like he said, maybe an arm drag, take the back, or maybe just, gable grip around the back and just,
Is jiu-jitsu my best go, though? I keep trying to tell Derek that I should do Krav Maga, and Derek says no, because they just teach you how to poke people in the, kill people in the eyeball with a pencil.
I can't speak about Krav Maga because I don't know what it is, but I can say that jiu-jitsu is very an efficient self-defense martial art.
What about just straight up boxing? Like old school, I keep trying to pitch Derek on other stuff because I feel everyone's doing BJJ now.
Well, there's a reason for that, right?
Because it's good, I know. But what if you trick somebody? Like, they're all ready to get BJJ on you, and I throw in some judo.
judo's great too, but judo's a part of jujitsu.
So I'm just gonna get beat by everyone. I've really got to pick my. It's
no, I mean, look, if you wanna learn how to box, you better, you know, if you fight a guy that knows jujitsu and for some reason he's gonna let you get a shot off, you hope that one shot knocks him out. Because if not, then you got serious trouble, right?
Man, damn it. Okay, sold. Jujitsu. I'm in. So do you train every day?
And since quarantine, no, only once or twice a week.
What was your ideal program pre?
Three times a week, and then, you know, other stuff the other days.
Everybody I know who does BJJ or any kind of jujitsu is perpetually hurt. They'll go for 2 weeks and be fine, and then they'll be totally laid up for 3 weeks.
That's I think the first 5 to 6, 7 years of your jujitsu, that can be what happens. But as you get like a little older in jujitsu, you kind of learn how to take care of yourself and not fight like a spastic and control yourself and make sure you're training with the right people and that kind of thing.
So you were training with the boys in Hawaii?
Yeah, I guess whatever, you know, the boys, sure.
Boys.
Yeah. People, train.
Yeah. Rolling.
Rolling, yeah.
Boys.
But Chaz, that's the beauty of jiu-jitsu is you can roll, you can spar at 80%, whereas boxing you can't really because you know you get a couple of socks in the head and you're not back there. But every time you go to do it, you roll, you know, 15, 20 minutes, half an hour of just straight fighting. So you get to use it. So you get to actually put it to practice and realize how you fought and everything you just drilled.
I was also thinking about maybe joining my daughter's ballet class though. So right now it's between jiu-jitsu and ballet.
Yeah, it depends what you're going for, though, right? I think a reason that people do jiu-jitsu is because, or why, you know, so many people are doing it is because it's very efficient. I mean, if you approach it like it's just for self-defense, you will learn how to defend yourself. And then if you like the sport of rolling and training, and the exercise of that, you will enjoy it for that reason too. So it's the way to go, whether you're trying to defend yourself or if you want to exercise or if you just want to, you know, if you like grappling.
Has there been a great BJJ or jiu-jitsu book written yet?
I mean, there's tons of books. Yeah. Yeah.
I read the, like, I Didn't Fight and Now I Fight book. But is there one specifically about like the history of jiu-jitsu?
Well, that's a tricky one too, because there's so many different versions of a similar story, and it all comes from a family, and it's a family with 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 different people in it. So there's like the basics of the beginning of Gracie Jiu-Jitsu, but then it all kind of gets, you know, different people.
To know, how the hell did they get it from Japan? I mean, which Gracie, did a Gracie go to Japan or?
No, a Japanese Jiu-Jitsu master came to Brazil and taught the kids of this guy. And those essentially there was four of them. But two of the sons, four or five, did Elio and Carlos have three brothers or two other brothers? Do you know?
Yeah. I don't know.
And so anyways, the Elio Gracie and Carlos Gracie's father had a jiu-jitsu master from Japan come over. What are you're pointing at me? You're telling me to stop?
No, I'm telling daughter quiet and go get ready for ballet.
Anyway, they taught these guys, five kids, Japanese jiu-jitsu, and Brazilian jiu-jitsu came out of that. And the reason Carlos and Elio are the most famous of the two is because they each had like six or seven kids. Elio Gracie, I think, had six kids. Carlos Gracie had, I think, 9 or 10 kids. And that's sort of why they're responsible for what Gracie Jiu-Jitsu and modern Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu is. It's from those two dudes, the son of the father who invited the Japanese master over.
It was Mitsuyo Maeda.
Mitsuyo Maeda. That's right. Yeah.
So if you had to do a book on one living jiu-jitsu dude, would it be Hickson Gracie?
Probably, yeah.
How good is Hickson?
I got to train with Hickson one time. Twice. I went to two. Crone Gracie had a school out here, and Hickson would do, they're not really seminars. I guess there were seminars. He'd invite a lot of people. There'd be, 150 people come to watch Hickson teach. And then I met him when I went to a couple of those things, and then I got to do a private lesson with Hickson, and we rolled for like 3.5 hours, and I was already a black belt. And by the time I left, he adjusted almost every single position, every single thing I did, he had a note. I mean, he was the most specific, everything was so specific, and it wasn't about specific techniques. It was all about connection and where my body should be and where my hips are and where my feet are and where my hands are. And I'm underselling it because I'm not explaining it well, but it was pretty amazing, man. The private I took with him was kind of like nothing else.
Hey, Jeff, maybe my next book should be Hickson Gracie. Oh, yeah. Become a California.
You can branch out of Australia.
Branch out of Australia. I think the amazing thing about Hickson, though, and Hoist and those guys, they all surfed, and it was them going to Hawaii and being able to stand up and getting on so well with the Hawaiians that gave the Brazilians a lot of respect in Hawaii.
Is that the case?
I believe so. That it was in the early 90s maybe, when Hickson and Hoist and Hoyle and all those guys, they all surfed, they went to Hawaii, and obviously they were tough guys. They introduced Brazilian jiu-jitsu to Hawaii, and that's why everyone does BJJ over there.
All right. I did not know that. It's a good question. Why is surf culture so wrapped up in jiu-jitsu? Why is jiu-jitsu so wrapped up in surf culture? And maybe that's the reason, what you just explained.
And also because they're both really fucking frustrating. And I know you, teach surfing to, autistic kids, which is beautiful. Yeah. But surfing to me is such a head fuck. I think it might be damaging to the poor children. Teaching him surfing.
No, man, it's really not, because the thing is, I'm so hard to talk about this without using pretentious words, like the stoke of surfing. I don't know what else to call it, but like that thing that we get when we surf, like no matter what's going on in our lives, our families are driving us crazy or whatever it is, like when you get a good one, all that shit goes away. For whether it's, a beach break where you're doing one turn, or you're on a point break wave, a 300 yard point break, whatever it is, like in that moment, all the bullshit goes away, And I think we all take that for granted. Also, it took us 20 years or however many years to actually experience that. You can't just be a dude who's never surfed before and go have that experience. It'll take you 3 or 4 years, dealing with the conditions, the people in the water, where you sit, all those things. It takes us, certainly in LA and Hawaii, I mean, it takes you a long time to actually experience that. And when you take an autistic kid surfing, it's not like we just push him into a wave and go, hey, figure it out. We're actually riding with the kid, and we're giving him that thing, again, that word, whatever we want to call it, that stoke or that feeling of being on a wave. You're giving them something that took us 20 years to figure out how to get. And it's crazy to see kids who are fighting and screaming and not wanting to do it, and then they're going down the line on a like perfect head high wave, and you just see them, everything goes, like all the bullshit goes away. And I mean, I've had kids on my board that kick and scream, don't want to go. I get a wave with them, and then they just point like, again, let's go again, one more. Because there's a child.
Oh yeah. Get your dance clothes. Come on.
But it's I guess what I'm trying to say is that thing that, somebody who's surfed for 10, 15, 20 years that we get all the time, we're giving a kid that needs that sort of shut off of all the bullshit more than anything else. And that, you know, that's sort of what they get to get by surfing with like an experienced surfer and being on a wave with someone who really knows how to, you know, get that thing. You know what I mean?
So can you describe your current relationship with surfing?
I'm a lazy surfer now. I'm like, I go to the spot I've been surfing for 20 years. And I don't like go chase swells really anymore. Like yesterday was pumping up in Ventura. I was like, you know, like solid 8 foot and stand up barrels. And I'm like surfing 1 foot Malibu on a longboard. Cause I'm just lazy. And like my first year in Hawaii, I would go up to the North Shore every weekend and go get, you know, scared to death and surf 10 foot Haleiwa and almost drowned. And I was super into that. And then as time passed, I realized I just kind of want to surf like a head high wave like a perfect point break head high wave, maybe go get barreled every once in a while, but I'm not like out there trying to, you know, charge double overhead surf anymore. I mean, I would do it on a trip or whatever, but I'm becoming a little lazy. Is that bad? Am I a kook now or what?
No. Do you think you will stop surfing eventually? There's a whole new genre of quitlet.
Of what is it? Quit what?
Quitlet. Where people writing their "I'm giving up surfing" memoir, basically. Quitlet.
No. I mean, listen, man. We're all I know. I don't know you, Derek, but I know I'm fucked in the head, and I know that Chaz is fucked in the head. So I assume you're probably pretty fucked in the head too. Like, we need that shit. We need jujitsu. We need surfing. Like, for me, you know, when I'm like in this space going goofy, my wife like says either go surfing or go do jujitsu. So I don't. Unless something replaces it, which I don't think anything can, my goal is to be able to do jujitsu and surf for the rest of my life.
Are you ever tempted by the creepy offshoots, i.e. foiling? You totally are. You've got a foil in your garage.
No, it's the one thing I didn't do. I got on the finless trip for a while.
Okay.
I was riding a lot of finless boards. I was super into the Elias and the like Derek Hine models and like, you know.
How do you do your first turn on those?
I mean, if you know how to surf and you get on one of those, it's like the greatest thing ever. But then I tore my bicep tendon riding one of them. So
like trying to drag?
Yeah. So like when you're doing like a backside spin, you kind of put your back, you know, like you're about to like do a big cutback, you put your hand in the water. It's kind of like the fin. You grab your rail, and as you hold this hand in the water, your tail spins around and then you're kind of like, you know, like up in the pocket and then it spins you back around. So I was like going super fast down the line on this finless board and I put my hand back to drag to spin. And like, I kind of, my body went like full this way and I was being held up. My board's pushing this way as I'm spinning, but I'm holding in the water with my hand. And I should have kind of let go because it was just like too late. It was just stretching too hard. I just held. And it sounded like my wetsuit ripped. It was just like, and it was like really good that day. And I paddled in and I was like with one arm and Joel Tudor's like running up the beach and I'm like walking up to the shower. He's like, come on, it's firing. I'm like, dude, I'm done. He's like, don't be a pussy. Let's go. I'm like, dude, something's wrong. And so I like just like hobbled up to my car and watched everybody get good waves. And then I had to have bicep surgery. And I haven't really ridden a lion since or a finless since.
I can't believe you survived a million arm bars and a fucking a finless surfboard on the left.
Go ahead. Well, so I had been training that day earlier. And I remember I was like on this dude's back for like 15 minutes. We were like rolling no time, just, you know, half hour rolls. And I kept trying to choke this dude and he was like had really good defense. So my bicep was, the doctor told me, he's like, it wasn't the wave. He says, your bicep, from what you told me, it was already overexhausted. And then that was just the thing that overdid it. So had I not been training like all morning, that probably wouldn't have happened. But I tore my ACL doing jujitsu, herniated two discs in my neck doing jujitsu.
Oh, jujitsu.
Yeah, but that's when I was, you know, younger and didn't really know how to not be, you know, the thing with jujitsu also is you can tell somebody like, yo, just relax and don't be a spaz. But it's like you have to learn that. It takes you 10 years to figure out, or 10, 15 years to figure out how to stay relaxed and not put yourself in bad positions or be comfortable in bad decisions so that you don't make stupid moves that end up hurting, you know, you get hurt. I mean, if you're going to compete, you're risking injury. But if you're just going to roll with your friends and, you know, roll with people that you like, there's no reason that you should get hurt. I mean, accidents happen, but you shouldn't be like tearing ACLs or bicep tendons and shit like that, you know.
Is that just pride? I mean, is that what it is at that point?
For sure. You know, I mean, sometimes, but like, you know, I have these herniated discs in my neck. So like, I really am not going to let someone put me in a triangle. I'm really not going to let somebody crank a guillotine. So I'm super careful to, you know, a lot of people say like, how do you get out of triangle? The answer is don't get in the triangle. Right. So like, I try really hard to protect my neck, but if someone does get me in a, you know, where my neck is compromised, hopefully my ego goes like this and I can tap and not have a sore neck the next day, you know?
How good is it having that panic button that you can just go, oh, I've had enough, tap, tap,
yeah,
tap.
Yeah, it's great, man. But then, you know, we're all like our ego, like, you know, Kaz was saying, like our egos jump out and get in the way of that sometimes. You know, I'm like rolling with some, you know, blue belt who gets lucky and throws a triangle on me, and I'm, you know, I'm teaching the class. I don't want to be like, hey, I got tapped by the blue belt. But
has it ever happened? The blue belt submitted you?
Not in a long time, Derek. Not in a long time. But yes, it has. You know,
what belt are you, Derek?
I'm a white belt, mate. I'm going to be a white belt for about the next 10 years, I reckon. I'm fucking hopeless. After 3 months, I had a little cauliflower ear. Had swollen ears. I had to get the Mickey Mouse fucking protectors because it's constantly on the ground. Just guys is fucking just pushing me into the dirt. Yeah. Just rubbing their gi fucking lapel over my face.
The trick to not getting cauliflower ear. What happened to James? James, is he on this? And I just see his name.
James.
He's a secretly.
James secretly is editing. He doesn't edit, but he's just quality control.
The secret to not getting cauliflower ear is when it swells up, don't train the next day. You know what I mean?
Well, but, you know, it's like you have to. You're just so psyched.
I know. But you don't have cauliflower ear and jiu-jitsu don't have to happen together. You don't have to get it.
But if you're a very poor practitioner of jiu-jitsu, it seems to be quite likely. And I was very embarrassed. I thought if I'm a black belt, I got cauliflower ears. Because you see all the Brazilian dudes have all got cauliflower ears. But it was pretty embarrassing to get my Christmas photos and there's this big thing hanging outside.
Yeah, it's a bummer. Yeah.
I was so stoked on the little wrestler kids in high school with cauliflower ear, though. I was so jealous of them. That was like the sign of toughness.
Yeah, well, you definitely can get it. If you're interested in cauliflower ear, it's on option. It's there for you if you want it.
I mean, that's worth for me to join up with BJJ tomorrow.
Yeah.
Nobody will find Ashton Goggins will not try to swing at me again when I pet his beard if I have cauliflower ear.
No, probably not. And if you have cauliflower ear, you've earned it and that won't happen. You will not, you know.
I thought my shattered multiple times nose earned it, but apparently not.
So didn't ring your bell, and did it continue? Because the video got cut. Did you want to fight him afterwards, or were you just kind of like, oh, you hit me?
No, I was actually worried. So again, at the podcast, he had called the cops on me. And so I was more worried, literally, when he swung, I was more worried that, damn it, he's going to call the cops again, and I'm going to have to deal with this on a cop level again, even though right. I wasn't the one who swung. And so that was my worry at the time. I should have probably thought my manhood and whatnot should have been challenged, and I should have jumped on him and smashed his face. But I was only thinking, damn it, I can't take a lawsuit. Like, I'll be in such trouble at home.
That's the beauty of jiu-jitsu too. Like, you can actually submit somebody or like get to the point of submission and, you know, without actually hurting someone.
Yeah. So that's why I need, I mean, it's totally true. I need it at this point, but yeah.
Like, Hicks and Gracie talks about he didn't ever like to hit people with his fists. He would just slap.
I mean, that's such the Hawaiian way, the beautiful Hawaiian slap. Oh,
but not even Hawaiian.
Eddie showed me his slap a couple times, and I still am. Now it's too late, damn it. Eddie's too old. But I wanted Eddie to slap me out at some point, just to feel how it felt, because I do feel I'm unknockoutable. But watching Eddie's hit is crazy.
Yeah.
The pressure. But yeah, Eddie, knock me out. I dare you.
Damn.
Hey, Scott, have you ever rolled with Kelly? Kelly is sort of a blue belt.
I've never rolled with Kelly, no. And someone like Kelly obviously has to be very careful with who he trains with. And I think he's probably very smart about that. If Kelly gets hurt doing jiu-jitsu, it's like a really dumb thing. So not that I've ever said, hey, Kelly, let's roll, and we didn't, but I imagine that he's very particular with who he trains with.
What about Rogan or Jocko?
Rogan, I'm a huge fan of Rogan, but I met him one time at a Metamoris Jiu-Jitsu event, but no, I've never rolled with Rogan, but I know that if anybody thinks that he's not really about that life, they are wrong. Like, that dude's actually, he's actually that dude who will fuck you up, you know?
He's got more black belts and such a variety of arts.
Yeah, no, I've seen him. I've seen footage of him kicking a bag, and that just looks like you go to the hospital after he kicks you.
Oh, I saw that. The noise that thing made, Jesus.
Yeah, and then Jean-Jacques Machado doesn't like hand out black belts to people that don't deserve them. So I'm 99% sure that he's a legit black belt in jiu-jitsu, and I've seen him work the heavy bag. So he's the truth.
Hey Scott, what's your favorite daddy movie? Mine's Rollerball. Favorite James Caan movie.
My favorite.
Yeah.
Thief.
Oh, I love Thief.
Yeah. Thief for sure.
You don't like Rollerball?
I love Rollerball as well. I would say Rollerball is probably my second favorite, but Thief is my favorite. I would say Thief, Rollerball, The Gambler.
Solid.
What?
The Gambler was solid.
Yeah. Probably those are my top three for him.
No.
Was your dad like the dad in Elf when you were a kid?
No, he was like Sonny Corleone.
Oh, really? Yeah. He seems like a very tough man.
Yeah. Well, that's another thing too. For me, like, I always felt like I had to prove I was tough because I felt like my dad was the toughest person on the planet. Like, he's not an actor who plays tough guys. He's a tough guy who got hired to act as he is.
How did your dad turn into a tough guy? I mean, what was his, did he just have like a hard street upbringing?
Yeah, I mean, he was born in the Bronx, grew up in Queens, you know. He's just a tough kid, you know. From the stories I heard, like I fought when I was a kid every once in a while, but the stories I heard, I feel like that they were fighting every day, you know, growing up. And my grandfather was like a legit tough Jew who, like, you know, with, you know, one of those guys who he didn't have not tough kids, you know.
Isn't your godfather actually a godfather? I think it's Andrew Russo from Columbo Mafia Group.
I don't know, Derek.
I don't know. I'm just Wikipedia. I don't know
anything about my godfather is Andrew Russo, but I don't, the Columbo, I don't know what you mean.
Well, it's good, you know, you need to keep your mouth shut with those things. But Hawaiians, let's talk about Hawaiians.
What's that?
Hey, what about, back to the hooligans.
Oh, wait, but about the Hawaiian thing, I just do want to clarify, and I'm not just saying this saving face. I swear to God, I'm not. Like, I genuinely, genuinely love Hawaii, and I genuinely love even the people that were mad at me. Like, Hawaii treated me very, very well. So I genuinely have nothing bad to say. And again, I'm not just saying this to protect myself. And who knows if I'll even go to Hawaii again. But, like, I Hawaii was very good to me.
But we all do, right? Like, I mean, Hawaii's funny to riff on. I mean, I feel, Derek, I don't know where you are, but I've moved through my... Okay, it's funny to hate Hawaii. And then, but there's something really genuine about that that I so cherish. Like, I love, like, punch every one of my teeth out and I will still love it. And I suppose that's how all of it's Stockholm syndrome.
Well, but not right. No, but like I was saying before, man, like, I experienced both sides of it, you know, like the welcoming And then, you know, there's a reason, there's just a reason for it. It's like, you know, Sonny Garcia one time said something that like really stuck with me. He was like, if you're good to Hawaii will be good to you. And that couldn't be more true. You know what I mean? If like you're good to the folks out there, they treat you right. And if you're an asshole, you get treated like an asshole. And I feel like that's a good way for people to be, you know?
I'm doubling down on Sonny Garcia from the Gucci shoe lady who said money that's made in Hawaii returns to Hawaii. So I feel that you have your next Hawaii chapter still to be written.
Hey, listen, I told you I was going to write I told you I wanted to write something and set it in Hawaii.
But I don't know why you'd like Hawaii. Okay. You as a creative and a writer and all this, I feel Hawaii is so untold, right?
I agree, man. I feel like it's a hard story to tell. And I feel like to get it right is really difficult. And, you know, I was there for 10 years as a writer. I feel like I could get it right. And then I go to dig in and I feel like I'd be getting it wrong. It's a tricky thing. No one's done it right. I mean, who's ever made a movie set in Hawaii where the culture is really spot on?
That Clooney film I thought was pretty close, at least.
I thought so too, but that's not really the world that we're so interested in. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's like the legacy Hawaii.
Yeah, and yes, I thought that was really cool. But I'm talking about, you know, just that, the surf culture and that, I don't know. It's just, I mean, surfing in general isn't told properly, I think, in movies ever, right? I mean, Big Wednesday, right? What else? I mean, we all love the North Shore, but that's still.
Well, I don't mean to be facetious, but I reckon Blue Crush got it pretty right. What's this in the sandbar, Hoshi? Come with the pipeline, no? So good.
Wait, I know the director of Blue Crush, I guess in parts, yeah. But it was really about like girls and, you know, girl power. And I don't know, I guess.
But there was a lot, like you said in parts, but there's elements of the movie that got it so right. You know, with Kala and the boys.
You hire Kala and Chris Taloa and, you know, those guys. Then, of course, that part seems legit and honest. Same thing with like North Shore. A lot of the parts of North Shore got it right. But
yeah,
But Chaz, I dare us to go figure out a film to make set, you know, in Hawaii that's done right. Like, I would love to do that.
I wonder, just chatting out loud here in front of all of Beach Grit's readers, if BJJ isn't almost the angle in with surfing as a counterpoint.
Yeah, but again, like that's a tough one to do too, because there's really, if you're not a BJJ freak, watching jiu-jitsu is really boring. Me, I'll geek out and watch jiu-jitsu for 6 hours. Like the only reason I have Instagram is to geek out on, you know, my whole feed is just jiu-jitsu stuff. But people who aren't into jiu-jitsu, it's just not, I just don't know cinematically if it translates to what it is, A, and B. Go ahead. You were going to say something?
I mean, there's another thing too. I think that Hawaii gets written off as Hawaii, but sticking Kauai is as different from Maui, is as different from Oahu as California is to New York, is to Florida, right? I mean,
I'm not up on that.
I mean, those islands are complete. I think people try to capture Hawaii, where I think if you captured Honolulu, mm-hmm. I think, you know, I mean, to me, Honolulu is a thing that's been, I don't know, teased, but it hasn't been captured.
I agree.
Yeah.
But, like, you said you're talking about like jiu-jitsu as being the angle in. There's a documentary on flow grappling right now. Derek, do you watch flow grappling at all?
I'm going to watch it right now. And you said that, I thought, ooh, Google that.
Well, no, it's a site that basically, it's a way to watch the pans, all the, you know, who's number one, the world's, any jiu-jitsu competition, you get to see, you join flow grappling and you watch it all. There's a documentary on these guys called the Daisy Fresh Crew. And it's about this this instructor who has a school in, God, I don't even know where it is, but it's somewhere. And these guys are just amazing, grimy. All they care about is jiu-jitsu. They live in shitty conditions and, you know, they eat ramen and all they do is train and train and train. And to me, I watch this documentary on these kids and it's like my favorite documentary in the world. And I'm like, how do we make this thing bigger? Like, I want to see 20 seasons of this. And then I realized like the jiu-jitsu community is even smaller than the surfing community, even though jiu-jitsu is blowing up. Like, I don't know if the angle of jiu-jitsu or surfing, even as big as surfing's become, if it's exciting to enough people. It is to me, but you know what I mean?
I think there's only a certain amount of people who can watch Hoist Gracie put someone in the guard for 30 minutes, huh?
I mean, right. But I mean, you'll watch it.
I'll watch right. it.
Anyway, Chaz, I don't know if jiu-jitsu as, you know, as
maybe it's a character in the film. Maybe it's just a character. It's a Brazilian guy comes to the North Shore and has interactions and shit.
Yeah.
So I'm writing this thing for you. Shit. Yeah. I want to write his credit on this thing.
It's super, super hard though, but so much of the nuance of Hawaii, I feel, I mean, it's the nuance is the beauty, right? It's not the what punches you in the mouth about Hawaii. It's the subtleties. And again, by Hawaii, it's even a...
What? Have you frozen, Chaz?
Both you guys froze and made me think it was frozen.
I was frozen in anticipation.
That's my new thing when I want to get off a Zoom call. I just freeze.
Just
before you do freeze,
North Shore versus Kauai versus Maui is wildly different. Like, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I spend most of my time on Oahu, so I don't really know.
I was waiting for you to freeze again. Go fuck! He's freezing again. And is it real freeze? What the fuck? Yeah. I was waiting for the. He really is an actor. You really are an actor, aren't you? You're amazing. Yeah. So good. Yeah. One thing about Hawaii though. Before you go,
By the way, I have a Zoom call at 4, so you guys can.
Touch
your board.
I have to go take
the kid to ballet in 5 minutes, so I'm the one who actually has to go.
It's weird.
But about the North Shore, yeah. How amazing is it that Eddie and everyone has kept country? That's one of the greatest things on earth.
Yeah, but again, I mean, how do we figure out a way to tell those stories? Or maybe those stories that maybe guys like Eddie don't want those stories told, and that's the reason they never get told.
Eddie wants a call. We just got to go back to Eddie. Eddie, when you hear this,
you kind of wrote the book already, right? I mean,
no, but there's so much more. That's what. So Eddie was only okay with me at the end, is because he knew he gave me 8% of his story, right? Eddie knows, and then I think Eddie felt that I got his voice close enough where he was like, okay, let's do this thing. So Eddie and I have talked multiple times about the Eddie story. Right. But then again, you got a stinking North Shore dude, Eddie Rothman. Oh, fucking love Eddie. I love Eddie Rothman more than anything. But weeding through Eddie's own story to get the actual story is a rough one. And then telling Eddie, this is the actual story. It wasn't the whatever you said it was.
What was the documentary about all the boys from Australia that came down in the 70s?
Busting down the door.
That was great, man.
Yeah, fucking amazing.
What about that? I mean, that would be a great movie to make, wouldn't it?
How has that not been made?
I don't know.
What about a great character that doesn't get talked about a lot is Fred Hemmings. So he's the polar opposite of Eddie Rothman. And he was, I think he was a senator. Is that right, Chaz?
Yeah, senator, Republican, dyed-in-the-wool Republican. I think he was a congressman, actually. I think he was like state senator in Hawaii, to be honest. He was never a senator.
And he was a great big wave surfer and helped usher in the pro surfing thing. But he was the polar opposite of Eddie. But Fred, who loves guns, or is an advocate for guns, whatever, he'd carry a gun because he was getting death threats and everything from the North Shore. He'd be such a good character. Fuck, I am really writing this shit.
Come on, man.
What are you guys doing? Chess has written the book. You're the movie.
I am married to you, Derek, more than I am to...
I can't believe you even dared whisper that.
She's coming down this
hall. Charlie, I'm coming down for you. Soon. You're going to get Goggins slapped again. Oh, Scott's frozen. He must be out.
No, he's acting.
You got any more good stories, Scott?
So many good stories.
Yes, sir. What about, have you used Dewey in a fight on the street?
Yeah. Like 14 years ago, I got into a fight. When I was a kid, I got in a ton of fights, but I've been in like two fights as an adult. When I was younger, a ton of fights, but I haven't, two fights. Once I got in a fight with this kid in a parking lot and I took him down and choked him out. And then,
what was the takedown? Was it a double leg or
no? I threw a leg kick, and after I threw the leg kick, he came at me and he kind of took me down. So I didn't take him down, and I pulled like we landed. I pulled guard and I swooped around to his back from my guard. I just kind of dragged the arm across and took his back. And
what belt were you then?
Blue belt.
Ooh, yeah, not bad.
Yeah.
Hey, have you rolled with Ashton Kutcher, Scott?
No, I have not.
I feel every role with Scott. Jesus, you haven't Kelly, Rogan, Jocko, no one.
No.
Joel Tudor?
Yep.
What's his game like?
He's a monster, dude. And really? When I rolled with him, I was recovering from my knee surgery, so we were just kind of flowing, playing around. But I felt, from the little bit that we were just playing, I felt he's the truth. And I know he is, just from, you know, I know he's really about it, but just from the little bit I've messed with him, he taught me a lot. I think I was a brown or a purple belt when he was teaching me some stuff, and he's definitely, he knows what's up.
What's better, short guys or tall guys?
Different.
The difference?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just different.
What is it, like tall guys have different leverage, but then short guys don't have as much to flap around to get caught with?
I mean, listen, if you're in a experienced guy with long legs guard, you got a lot more to deal with than a short guy, you know, short guy's guard. But if I pass your guard and I'm at side control or I'm mounting you, I don't care how long your legs are, because I'm just dealing with the upper half of your body, making sure your legs don't come into play. Okay. So it doesn't really matter. But, and as you say, I haven't rolled with I haven't rolled with Joe Rogan or Kelly, but I have rolled with Hickman, I've rolled with Henzo, I've rolled with Hedon, I've rolled with a lot of, I've been really...
You rolled with Henner?
Never Henner, just Hedon.
Okay, Hedon's amazing, huh?
Another level, all those guys, another level. Same thing, Henzo Gracie, it was like one of the greatest 2.5 hours of my life. This dude just taught me more in 2 hours than I learned in 2 years of training. I mean, there's a reason... Never rolled with Crone.
And Crone Gracie, I blew a bunch of my wallet on Crone Gracie. Do you remember what fight was it? It was on a fight night a while ago. And it was
Cub Swanson.
It was the one he decided that he was going to go toe-to-toe and not go to the ground.
Yeah,
and I blew it. And he put up a good fight, but he lost. And I had so much ruckus. I was like, he's going to fucking roll this guy. He's going to fucking put him in a leg lock straight away. It's going to be over. And then he's like, starts throwing punches. I'm like, oh my God, what's he doing?
That's an interesting fight you talk about. Because to me, Crone in that fight was, like you said, he was trying to go toe-to-toe with the dude. Mm. And I feel like, A, had he not done that, it might have been a different outcome, but still, if that fight went on for another 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 20 minutes, Crone is going to win that fight.
Yeah, true. Yeah.
That's how I feel. Yeah. And that's kind of the beauty of jiu-jitsu. That's sort of what his grandfather said. Look, we're going to figure out a way to not tire out and last long enough to eventually get onto your back or on top of you and put you to sleep.
Right.
You know? Because, you know, Elio Gracie weighed 140 pounds or something like crazy like that. And this dude was fighting guys that weighed 180, 190, 200 pounds.
Mm. He's still rolling when he's 90, huh? I believe.
Yeah.
Fucking wow. Amazing family.
Yeah. Yeah, we were talking about, like, you know, making a movie about them. It would be so amazing. I just think the problem is there's so many different stories, you know, like,
There's Hodger and there's Henzo and there's Hoyce.
Yeah, they all, you know, they all have, I don't think anyone's not telling the truth, but they all have their own opinion about how things went down. And it's like, nobody can say, oh, he's wrong, but they could just say, I see it differently. And when you're talking about a family that has 50 people in it, how do you tell the right story? You're going to tell one side of the story, and then people on the other side of the family are going to be like, wait a minute, that's not how it went down. Your opinion of how it happened isn't how I saw it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I can imagine the minefield about making a movie about Brazilian jiu-jitsu as sort of like making something about Hawaii.
Yeah.
It's going to be the wrong thing said.
Yeah, man. I don't even like, sometimes I don't even like talk, like when you ask me about it, I feel like I don't want to say the wrong thing because I don't really know what happened. You know what I mean? I don't really know. There's beef, you know, this guy has beef with this guy. And it's like, how did that happen? It's like, well, I heard this. And then someone else can be like, well, you heard wrong, motherfucker. You know what I mean?
You would have seen the documentary Choker.
Sure, that was amazing, man.
Yeah, it's incredible, yeah. Right?
It almost seemed like, you know, that was the time for jiu-jitsu when, I love that this is turning into a jiu-jitsu podcast. This is great. What'd you say?
It's exciting. It's funny because I do a jiu-jitsu podcast as well with the guy who owns the gym down in Maribor. Yeah. And I was just thinking, what if I can clip some of these little fucking sound bites?
Yeah, sure, man. What were we saying? Fuck it.
We were talking. Oh, yeah, Choke.
You're on Choke.
Oh, yeah. Just saying, like, you know, everybody now talks about jiu-jitsu like, oh, it's defendable. And people in the UFC learn jiu-jitsu defense. It's like, okay, but they allowed that to happen, right? If Brazilian jiu-jitsu never became mainstream and they refused to teach it to anybody and they refused to let everybody in, which is what they did, people who know jiu-jitsu would still be smashing on everybody. And what's proof of that is you see Hickson. I mean, it looked like he had some tough fights, but at the end of the day, it didn't look like anyone was even close. You know what I mean? And so,
yeah, it's amazing.
It looked, and imagine, like, that's when nobody else knew jiu-jitsu. So today to say that, like, oh, it's defendable and, you know, we figured it out. It's like, yeah, they brought it to you and allowed you to figure it out. But without that, they'd still be smashing on everybody, you know, I think.
Yeah.
How rad was it in Choke, that little Japanese guy was 5'5 or something? He's weighed about 120 pounds.
When he had no
pounds.
Eyes by the end of the fight?
Yeah, he's a shoot fighter. Yeah. And it was kind of like a judo thing. He just wait for guys to get him in the leg lock and just getting pounded in the face, closing his eyes every fight, and then just eventually get in a leg lock. Out.
Yeah, it was amazing, man. Yeah.
Has anyone ever tried to get you to Matt Damon tried to get you to Byron Bay or anything? I think that'd be the ultimate Hollywood thing for you. Move to Byron Bay with Matt Damon and open a jiu-jitsu academy and surf.
Wait, does Matt live in Australia?
He's down here a lot.
And Zac Efron, Chris Hemsworth,
yeah, Melissa McCarthy's moved down. Sacha Baron Cohen just moved here permanently.
Yeah, right, because they wanted to kill him or something like that, right?
Probably, yeah.
Rudy Giuliani's after him.
Yeah, but now you. Yeah, but his wife is from Sydney, isn't she?
Oh, she's from Perth.
She's from Perth. Yeah, right. Hey, buddy,
yeah, it's crazy, man. Like, I've come across a ton of people from Australia, and I've never been. And I love, like, all my friends that are from Australia. I love them, and I love everything about it, and I've still never been. So that's,
you gotta join the Laxodus, it's called.
The what?
The Laxodus. It's LA Exodus.
Oh, it's LA Exodus. I got it.
LA Exodus. Man, are you in LA right now? Are you in?
Yeah, LA.
Fucking sorry. I apologize.
Why? What are you apologizing for? You're nothing to be sorry for.
It's all good, man.
Yeah, it's like, I just know so many people have got out of there. And Chaz is always, me, Chaz, I always have a laugh about it. He's like, man, San Diego's great. LA is just like, you go there, it's just, you go past Orange County and just hits an apocalypse zone.
Yeah, it's a little crazy right now.
Yeah.
What about you guys, like your surf spots? Have you noticed over the course of your life, like, is it just as insane trying to get waves down there at your spots or not so much?
Your spot, Derek.
What's that?
Yeah, it's crazy. It's so fucking insane. Every Val lives in Bondi now, and there's probably 10 people in each wave. But then you get little moments, you know, you just go for surf, swell just picks up or it's onshore. You can always find little moments of glory.
Yeah, it's like now you're looking for onshore days so that there's less
people. Yeah, onshore is the new offshore. Yeah. It's amazing. Fuck, it's onshore. Let's get out of
it. Crazy.
It's going to turn onshore later. Yeah.
I know, but I think it's only... But then, like, outside of the major places, it's kind of, it's a little busier, right? But it's not not hugely.
It feels like every spot on the coast now has a crew. Was before you go to somewhere there'd be no one. Oh, fuck. Yeah.
But not. But like surfing in California is just, I go when it's fuck, next level crazy.
Dude, it's crazy. I mean, I remember when I was a kid. You know, it was punk to surf. It wasn't cool. It wasn't, you know, like, you know, not, you didn't see Range Rovers in the parking lot and like girls with surfboards and like rich people with their foamies. And like, it wasn't like that. You know, you go any surf spot and if you did something wrong, you got slapped in the mouth. And now it's like, I'm going to call the police. Like you hear that in the lineup, like he hit me with his board. I'm calling the police. It's like, what's happening? You know, it's out of control.
We don't have that yet. It hasn't come to that level down here yet.
Oh, it's on its way.
No way. We still got it. There's still a bit of localism right now out here. Yeah.
Well, the good for you guys. That's good.
Good. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Here it's gone. You can't even.
Yeah. The WSL just completely bastardized it, haven't they? And opened it up to the masses.
I mean, I don't know if it's the WSL's fault. I don't know whose fault it is, but, you know, you remember, like, people that surfed when I was growing up were like the people that didn't want to be involved in, like, you know, what
team sports, yeah, and coaches.
Yeah.
And
like what you did, like, when I remember I surfed and my dad was like, you what? You're surf? What do you mean? Like skateboarding? What's the matter with you? Rap music and skateboarding? What's wrong with you? And now it's like, you know, 6-year-old kids in Beverly Hills get skateboards for Christmas and surfboards and, you know.
And personal coaching too. They get the skateboard and they get a personal coach.
Crazy, yeah. We were just doing it. It was like, what can we, like, we want to get high and like be different. Like, oh, you surf. Like, yeah, okay. Now it's, you know, I don't know.
You got
we actually have a genre of literature now. Chaz spoke about quit lit because a lot of people talk about quitting, older guys. And we have one called Val Lit, and Val means vulnerable adult learner. So there's all these Val Lit stories now about guys who people at work tell them they surf and everyone is surfing now. And just about the influx of Vals into surfing.
That's funny because you know what Val means here, right?
They're from the Valley. That's why we coined it because someone talks about adult learners. I'm thinking vulnerable adult learner, Val.
Yeah.
So get old meaning the Val. But then it creates this new thing.
Yeah.
Amazing, huh?
Yeah, yeah. It's weird too, man, because it's like you get stuck in, you kind of don't know how to act anymore, right? Like when I was younger, like the dudes that got the most waves and the dudes that, you know, kind of like had their place in the pecking order, there was, not only could they surf good, but they also, you didn't want to cross them because you'd get beat up, right? So now it's like I get into a beef with somebody in the water and I'm putting on that like persona that I believe that should exist in the water. But then I feel like a dick because the dude's looking at me like, yo, why are you being like this? Like, you're stupid. What, you want to fight me? And I'm like, no, I don't really want to fight you, but you just fucking blew it. And you're like bumming everybody out. And he's like, no, you're bumming everybody out. And I'm like, oh my God, he's right.
You're a bummer.
I'm the dick. You are. No, but it's true. It's like, I'm the dick, but I'm just trying to like keep the integrity of the thing that it should be that way. There should be a pecking order. And there should be like, if you do that, you're going to get beat up. Otherwise there wouldn't be 17 people dropping in on a set wave when someone who can actually surf is coming down the line. Like there's gotta be rules, you know?
Gotta be rules. You ever punched anyone's fins out?
Have I what?
You ever punched anyone's fins out?
No, you can't. You'll get sued. Like someone will literally be on the beach with the cops and like he has to pay for my board. You know?
Derek has.
I punched the fucking fins out. You like that?
What?
It's funny. I went to this this thing for this wave pool that's getting built in Sydney and they're trying to raise money for it. And a guy looks at me and goes, I saw you punch a guy's fins out in the water. That was years ago. And that's an embarrassing thing to be recognized for.
Yeah, I guess it is, but I appreciate that, right? Like, I
it feels good, Scotty. It feels good to feel those fins coming out of those FCS plugs.
Ooh. You know that guy's going right to the surf shop, like, hey, can you fix this?
Obviously, if he was big and threatening, I wouldn't have gone near him. I would apologize for being near him.
Yeah, the worst thing now is just like, if I'm coming down the line, I'll get a leash pull. right? Like I'll yank somebody's leash, you know, and then, or like maybe a little shove off the back, but you can't do anything. You can't like, you can't actually get into a fight. You can't threaten somebody. You get sued.
Not when you missed a movie fucking star.
What's that?
When you missed a movie star.
The guy, he did it. He punched my fins out.
He traumatized me. I was just trying to serve.
Yeah, and I'm like, dude, Derek taught me to do that. That's not even my thing.
The white belt in jiu-jitsu taught me how to fight.
Yeah.
I remember when I was, it wasn't even the threat of a fight though. It was just a shame that you'd have if you did something wrong and all the old guys were looking at you and the whole, you just want to paddle in and die. If you did something wrong, because it was Mac was against you. It's still bad places.
Yeah, or if you drop in on the wrong dude, it's like, shame. You don't even have to. It's like, get the fuck out of the water, you know?
Yeah. It wasn't even a threat of violence. It was just, you know, you've done the wrong thing against the tribe.
When I was the breakwater, it's not even like, you know, a great wave, but when I was a kid, I knew some dudes in Venice, and this is when Venice used to be like a rough place. Like if I wanted to surf down in Venice when I was a kid, I literally would have to call somebody that I knew down there. And they'd be like, yeah, bring a joint and a sandwich for one of the boys. And you can, you know, we'll let you get a couple. Like it wasn't, you didn't just paddle out there and like, hey, how's everybody doing? They'd be like, get the fuck out of here. You nuts.
Have you seen my new JOB soft top? Check it out. Sustainable and authentic.
But we're wrong.
Wrong. Like
Jonah Hill's really very, very wrong, Scott. It's
wrong.
It's shameful.
We're out there in the water going like, or I'm thinking, God, I'm the bad guy now. Whatever.
It's very sad. All right, thanks, Scott. Thanks for your time.
Thank you, guys.
No problem. See you,
bro. That's me.
Doesn't love a classic chocolate chip cookie? Famous Amos has been making them since the 70s, 1975 to be exact. With semi-sweet chocolate chips and a satisfying crunch, it's everything classic in one bite-sized cookie, and fans couldn't get enough. That's right. You'll find our original recipe, the one you know and love, in every bag of Famous Amos original chocolate chip cookies. Find Famous Amos anywhere you buy your favorite snacks.
When your space has the long-lasting, noticeable scent of Airwick Vibrant Essential Mist, you'll want to invite everyone over. From book club to reality TV watch parties, even the in-laws.
It smells amazing.
Airwick Vibrant Essential Mist is infused with 2 times more essential oil versus regular Airwick Essential Mist for our most authentic, nature-inspired fragrance experience. Airwick Vibrant Essential Mist is perfectly portable and effortlessly easy. The way fragrance should be. Now that's a breath of fresh Airwick.